At the legislature today, a briefing by the governor and officials from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency was meant to reassure West Virginians affected by the Elk River chemical spill that all is well. But it did little to reassure members of the Joint Commission on Water Resources. And the legislature was seen red today for a good cause. These stories coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. As lawmakers continue to study the Elk River chemical spill, today they heard testimony from the director of the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, in charge of response to emergencies and disasters. His testimony, however, did little to calm the concerns of some senators. Director Jimmy Jeanette told legislators so far his department has distributed roughly 20 million bottles of water of both donated and federal supplies. The interagency team has collected more than 2,200 samples, and as of today, only one fire hydrant in the nine-county system is showing any signs of the chemical in test results. But after Wednesday's press conference, where reporters pressed Governor Tomlin for home water testing, lawmakers want to know if the state is going forward with plans to find a sample of homes. Jeanette says that's still a work in progress.
You can't just walk into someone's home and say, we want to test your water. And so we're looking at, you know, how do we do that? What types of permissions do we need? What types of waivers do we need as far as individuals? And, you know, this is still being reviewed, so there's no set plan as to who actually is going to go on to the person's property. If there's anything that has to be done to the plumbing, who's going to do that work? How do we validate that the home was previously flushed and has done, met the flushing requirements that have been laid out?
Senate Majority Leader John Unger supports testing a sample of homes. He says right now, lawmakers should be focused on restoring the public's trust, not just in their water, but in their government, and shares in the frustration his constituents have expressed over the federal government's involvement in the testing and cleanup process.
I want to appeal that we're not lab rats, we're not poster children, but we're human beings. We're human beings, and also we're Americans. And we deserve the same treatment and attention to help mitigate this situation, to build the confidence back in the people. With the breach of trust that's that's happened here, we need to do everything we can to regain that trust and to prove and to ensure that the people's water resource is protected.
It's a lack of attention paid to the issue, a lack of willingness to monitor health effects that he wants to see change.
Instead of the Center for Disease Control coming in for a day and holding a press conference and then climbing on their plane and flying out that evening, I say they need to come in with teams and spend some time here truly analyzing this chemical, truly doing the testing, and seeing what's happening within the infrastructure itself so that we can fully clean out this thing.
Senator Ron Miller's concern is with the schools, where test results are coming back at safe levels, and yet some students and staff are still experiencing side effects.
I've heard stories, and I haven't verified those, of people who are moving because they're afraid for their children to be in the school systems here. They're afraid to be here. I'm not sure that we need to take those drastic steps to leave, but it's going to hurt our whole state, not just the Charleston area. So the concern is in schools. The concern is in homes. But the concern is about, if you want to use the trite word, brand. Our brand is a state, and what we're saying to we need all of our young professionals. We need young families, and this is a frightening experience for them.
Miller is from Greenbrier County, where he says the public has been experiencing water issues for years. And a floor speech by Senator Mike Green last week exposed problems in a small town in Wyoming County that hasn't had clean water since September. Miller says those two examples show this is just another infrastructure issue to add to West Virginia's list that already includes problems with aging infrastructure and bridges and a lack of internet access. But this one he calls essential to the state's future.
Where there is no vision, the people perish. And I'm afraid that we've lost our visionary leadership. We are not envisioning what we can become. Infrastructure is part of that visioning, and we have to start emphasizing and putting. That's how you build confidence. That's how you build communities. That's how you bring people home. They're going to come home if there's something here for them, but they're going to come home if they can raise their family here. We have to continue pushing that in the state, and that's vision. So if you're talking about infrastructure, yes, but it takes visionary. We've got to have visionary leadership to build that, too.
Miller says after the people, water is the state's most valuable resource, and it should be treated as such. After a brief delay, the House convened for its final floor session of the week. As Aaron Payne reports, two bills were up for vote.
House Bill 4010 creates the Uniform Real Property Electronic Recording Act. It was approved and recommended for enactment in all 50 states by the National Conference of Commissioners of Uniform State Laws. Delegate Mark Hunt explained exactly what the act would entail.
The proposed act authorizes county clerks to begin accepting records in electronic form, storing electronic records, and setting up systems for searching and retrieving those land records. Urge passage of the bill.
The question now is on passage of the bill. All those in favor will vote green. All those opposed will vote red. The clerk will prepare the machine. Has every member voted? If so, the clerk will close the machine and ascertain the results. There being 87 ayes, 3 nays, 10 members absent, not voting, a majority of the members present having voted in the affirmative, I declare the bill passed.
The bill will now move on to the Senate. The other bill up for vote today was House Bill 4220 relating to requirements for agreements when consumers waive their rights to trials by jury in favor of mandatory arbitration on claims arising from related consumer transactions. Delegate Tim Manchin explained to his colleagues specifically what those requirements would be.
This bill simply requires that when a consumer who is allowed to waive their right to a jury trial in a consumer transaction, whenever they desire to do so, it has to be done on a separate document. And that separate document must be drawn up in a conspicuous manner.
The bill passed unanimously and moves over to the Senate. Today was also Wear Red Day as part of the campaign to raise awareness of heart disease in women. Many delegates wore red clothing or small red pins to help promote awareness. Delegate Barbara Fleshauer spoke to her colleagues about the unique symptoms of heart disease in women.
One of the things to remember is that cardiovascular disease can have symptoms in women that are very different from men. I'm just going to read four of them. Men sometimes have the odd symptom of pain in their left arm, but four major signs for women are shortness of breath, irregular pain in the upper or lower back, jaw pain associated with exertion, and nausea with flu-like symptoms. So for those of you who are women, it's important to be aware about this, and for those of you who love women, which I hope includes everyone in this room, please be thinking about that and make sure that you share that information with those you love.
According to the CDC, heart disease is the leading cause of death in women. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
In a moment, we'll discuss the week's events at the state capitol with two of our colleagues from the Capitol Press Corps. First, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today. Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 510, relating to the Research Trust Fund. The bill increases the recipients of the fund to include all state land-grant institutions of higher education. The bill also provides for a $25 million transfer from the General Revenue Fund into the West Virginia Research Trust Fund under certain conditions. Senate Bill 511, to provide greater transparency and accountability in state government by requiring the legislative auditor to conduct performance reviews and audits for every government spending unit, including members of the Board of Public Works and the legislature, on a regular basis. And Senate Bill 514, to eliminate the eligibility of the cleanup of real property damaged by a methamphetamine laboratory as an allowable compensation award under the West Virginia Crime Victims Compensation Act. Up for passage in the Senate on Monday, Senate Bill 426, to alleviate any lapse in filling vacancies and to assure that members are not forced to serve beyond their appointment time. Senate Bill 450 to define a public place to clarify that facilities licensed to sell alcoholic liquors may do so in outdoor dining areas. And Senate Bill 470 to provide that completed grand jury questionnaire forms are confidential and may only be released from custody of the clerk with written permission of the circuit court. On second reading, Senate Bill 90, creating a criminal offense for interfering with or preventing a person from calling for the assistance of emergency service personnel. And Senate Bill 454, to define the owner of a dam for purposes of the Dam Control Act. This week saw a public hearing that allowed citizens to vent to members of the legislature about how frustrated they are by the chemical leak, and another briefing by Governor Tomlin and officials from the CDC and EPA about the condition of the Kanawha Valley's water. Also, the legislature began to work on the issues that were studied during its monthly interim meetings, issues that were expected to take center stage until the chemical leak. Joining us tonight with more about these issues are Pam Pritt, State House reporter for the Beckley Register Herald, and Dave Boucher, the State House reporter for the Charleston Daily Mail. Thank you both for being here tonight. So, obviously, the top story of the week is the water crisis. Still on the minds of legislators, both in the Senate and in the House, I think it's quite obvious. There was a House Health Committee meeting yesterday in which Jeff McIntyre appeared. Pam, I understand you were at that meeting. Is there anything from his testimony that stuck out to you?
The levels of the chemical that he didn't know, could not ascertain, how much of the 10,000 gallons went down the river and how much that was taken into the water system. And clearly, it was a considerable amount because we're still experiencing the smell of that water today.
I think that's really interesting. And also we saw in the piece today Senator Ron Miller's concerns about the schools. And then there was new information that came out about a new high school today as well being affected by this water.
Right. George Washington High School had levels of, I believe, 18.33 parts per billion, which is still considerably lower than what the CDC says is acceptable.
And we've also seen just recently in the last few minutes results come back. That was one test where they saw the 18 parts per billion. The state was quick to point out that they've had two other tests that showed a non-detect, which is different than nothing in the water, but it just means that their testing wasn't able to detect the chemical. And they're arguing, well, maybe this 18 part per billion test might have been a variance that is inherent in any sort of sampling, which is not unexpected for the state's perspective. They also released some sampling from other schools in the area that they said was also a non-detect.
But it's still concerning for people in the community that, you know, we've flushed these systems already. You're telling us this water is safe. And then we have people, teachers, we have students at schools complaining of a smell and then complaining of the health effects as well. That's a concern, but they still maintain that the flushing is working?
That's right. President McIntyre from West Virginia American Water told me after that meeting yesterday that he is confident that the flushing is working, but working is defined as getting the water below this one part per million safe level that was determined by the CDC. He said, you know, he can't really comment on the health effects or whether there's even a connection between this flushing procedure that happened at Riverside High School and some of the other schools and whether or not that was connected to kids feeling dizzy or people potentially passing out. And so I think that's probably one of the scariest parts that some of the people in the valley or the affected areas are considering is if there's nothing in the, there's a non-detect in the water and people are still feeling side effects, why is that? I mean, none of the kids or the teachers at the school drank the water. They didn't touch the water. They weren't washing their hands, and yet there were still side effects. So there's still a lot of questions as to how that's even possible.
I think it's fair to say there have been a lot of contradictions so far in some of the statements that they've made and the information that has come out. But that also leads me back to the press conference we had on Wednesday, the first time that we've heard from federal officials about the work that they're doing, both the EPA and the CDC, and what they're doing on site. Anything alarming to you come from that press conference, Pam?
Alarming from the press conference? The press conference was pretty well scripted until reporters started asking questions. And then about testing in homes, which was not going to be an issue at all, in about a half an hour, we received in the press room a memo from House leadership that say they were encouraging testing. And in about another hour and a half or so, the governor came out and said that he was going to evaluate that. So clearly, journalism made a difference at that press conference.
I agree. I mean, there was a line of questioning that several different reporters talked about, and the governor's response initially was, well, we're not sure it's feasible to test in 100,000 homes, which was immediately followed by, what about representative sampling? And like Pam said, there was a letter from House leadership, and then I think we saw a tweet at about 6:30, maybe 7 o'clock mm-hmm. that evening that said, well, we're going to evaluate it. I think it's worth noticing or worth noting that Mr. McIntyre yesterday after the meeting said that he met with Governor Tomlin after that statement was made, and they're discussing how that's going to work. He said that they were in negotiations or in discussions about who would actually pay for the testing. I know in that letter the House leadership said that they thought that it might be a good idea for the water company to pay for that testing. During the hearing yesterday, Mr. McIntyre said he doesn't think it's fair that they would have to pay for anything because it's Freedom Industries' fault that this happened and they are a victim, just like all the residents in the area. So there's still discussions about who's going to pay for what, but it was kind of a rapid turnaround from no in-home testing to evaluating it in a matter of, you know, hours.
You know, it was interesting to me. You pointed out another contradiction that we saw with the CDC official as well about this idea of the water being safe. They've said all along, well, the water is safe for you to drink now. When you flush and you're given the all clear, it's safe. But she kind of flipped on that position?
Sure. This was Dr. Popovic who spoke, a CDC official, who spoke during the hearing and said, based on the evidence we have, you can use the water to drink. You can use the water to bathe. And then after the press conference, when reporters went up to speak with her, she said, well, the question's not whether the water is safe. It's whether it's appropriate for use. And later said that the CDC doesn't use the term safe. At the hearing last night, Dr. Letitia Tierney, who's the state health official and commissioner of the Bureau for Public Health, said that people have different definitions of safe. And that's... and you can understand where they wouldn't necessarily want to guarantee that no one would ever get sick by drinking their tap water. But again, just saying that there are different definitions of safe bring up more questions and speaks to this idea of a lack of trust or different messages coming from different public health officials.
I think people are confused, and they have a right to be, because there have been so many mixed signals and mixed messages throughout this crisis.
Yeah, I think that's fairly obvious. Pam, if I can ask you a personal question. You are from Pocahontas County and go home on the weekends. And you made a comment in passing to me this week about bringing water back with you to Charleston.
I do. I bring about 5 gallons of water with me every trip just for drinking and cooking.
So I think your personal position, which as reporters we aren't supposed to give our personal opinions, but your position I think is quite evident of what the entire valley is feeling. I think a lot of people are still traveling to find clean water. I mean, we heard at the House's public hearing a woman say, you know, I'm traveling to find clean water to wash my clothes in because I don't even feel safe putting my children in clothing that has been washed in this water. I think that's a fairly serious statement to make, and it says a lot about what the public is feeling.
I will say that's not unusual behavior for me. I take Pocahontas County water with me wherever I go.
Well, if we can, obviously the Senate took the lead on the bill. They've passed the bill, and it's now in the hands of the House. But where does it stand? Where are we at right now with 373?
I believe it comes up in the House Health and Human Resources Committee on Monday afternoon.
And do we expect a lot of discussion?
Yeah, well, obviously, all of this testimony that's taken place in this health committee is moving toward what's going to happen with the bill. The discussion that's happened most recently about the bill is whether they could split the issues. And as people know, the legislation right now focuses on two major aspects. One, regulating above-ground storage tanks. And two, sort of outlining some guidelines for more emergency preparedness measures in the community. And there's been discussions about whether that might be a good idea to split those apart. I know Senate President Kessler said he doesn't think that's a good idea. Last night, though, although President McIntyre said he's not just intimately familiar with the bill, he did say he thought that that might be something worth considering. I know there's been lots of discussion outside of committee meetings about whether that's going to happen or other potential changes in legislation. So I expect something like that to be at least proposed on Monday.
I believe Mr. McIntyre said that he thinks the bill makes the water company the regulatory agent in this, and he does not want that to happen.
Right, and he wants people to avoid making the water company the de facto regulators in this. And I think he's referring to, you know, some of the communications that might be required under emergency management. I know there's plenty of discussion about whether who knew what about this chemical and where it was stored, and I know the water company has said that before the spill they didn't know what chemical was stored at this site, and I think that's part of the conversation that's going to take place involving the emergency preparedness portion of this bill.
Yeah, and I do want to briefly mention that, you know, we are obviously taking a stance on this at the state level, and they're trying to do something about it, but it's getting attention at the federal level as well, and we'll have this House committee hearing here on Monday, which I'm assuming both of you will be attending, and I'll be there as well. I think it'll be interesting to see what they have to say at that level. I do want to move on kind of to an issue that came up and was studied heavily during interims, and now we're not sure if we're even going to get to. Delegate Mike Menypenny, who is on the Joint Water Resource Commission, he has introduced his medical marijuana bill. I mean, the Joint Health Committee spent weeks on this. I mean, we had multiple hearings talking about this bill, and yet it's been introduced in the House and nothing has come up. So, Pam, I do want to start with you because I want to focus on your area. Is there an interest in southern West Virginia, or even in the area that you're from, in Pocahontas and Tucker counties, is there an interest in marijuana, in making it legal?
I think there is, and not just as a drug of choice, but also as a commodity, as a way to sort of invigorate a farm, and for the taxation that it would have. I mean, Colorado has seen $1 million in its first few months of legalization, and I think folks in my area see it as a way to help the state out of a pretty bad financial situation.
Right. I think that's an interesting point. I mean, Dave, I do want to throw something at you. You've been covering the legislature for a while, and is this a way for us to get ahead? We're obviously having budget issues. Is this a way for us to get ahead to tax a commodity like this?
Well, I think that there have been discussions, and this is obviously, like you said, come up in interims. There's been discussions about whether this would be a revenue-neutral sort of proposition, in that there could be any money that you might get from taxing this substance might need to go back into regulation or monitoring of whether the program is functioning adequately. And that's been discussed, obviously, not just in West Virginia. I think as far as this session is concerned, though, there's a couple of just very obvious impediments that could stand between the bill coming up. Obviously, like you said, Delegate Menypenny is on the Water Resource Committee, and this bill has been referenced to health, which has been focused on the water bill right now. And so those are two obvious things that have just kind of stood in the way of this bill coming up at all.
So getting held up by other issues. And like many things are, I know that the House is also working on the pseudoephedrine bill, which we saw in the Senate this week. Things are just kind of getting backed up by water. But hopefully things will progress and we'll move along and we'll see action in all of these areas. Thank you both for joining me tonight. This was a great conversation and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today. Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 4437, to allow the Division of Juvenile Services to maintain trustee bank accounts, earnings, and property for its residents in the same manner as accounts are handled by the Division of Corrections, and to create a resident benefit fund for the benefit and welfare of the residents in any state juvenile facility and for the benefit of the victims. House Bill 4439, to allow the Department of Agriculture to create a program to support and develop West Virginia veterans into the field of agriculture. House Bill 4441, to permit a teacher who holds a valid concealed deadly weapon license to carry the weapon on school property for the protection of students and school employees, if approved in writing by the County Board of Education and the teacher has passed drug testing. Up for passage in the House on Monday, House Bill 4214, to encourage and assist persons diagnosed with schizophrenia to designate a durable medical power of attorney to assist the patient in avoiding future involuntary commitments when the person becomes unstable. House Bill 4278, to rewrite the procedure by which corporations may obtain authorization from the West Virginia Board of Medicine to practice medicine and surgery. And House Bill 4336, to give the State Board of Education no more than 5 years to improve any school or school system under its control. The bill also requires the State Board to hold a public hearing if it seeks to take control of a school system again. This has been the legislature today. On Monday, Beth Voorhees talks with Karen Bowling, the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources. We welcome your comments. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the legislature today provided by the West Virginia AFL-CIO. the voice for West Virginia workers, online at WVAFLCIO.org. In case you tuned in late, you can catch podcasts on the legislature today, on our website at WVPublic.org, and also catch it tonight again at a rebroadcast at 11:30 on West Virginia PBS. And the congressional hearing that Ashton was talking about earlier, you can hear that in its entirety Monday morning starting at 9 on West Virginia Public Radio. And for more information, go to our website at WVPublic.org.